Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, the NEG, the National Energy Guarantee, is a signature policy of the Prime Minister. It's a rallying point for Conservatives in the government, like former PM Tony Abbott, because they have different ideas about how it should work. It's much more than an energy policy. It now is something closely aligned to the fate of the Prime Minister himself, perhaps after a fairly amazing week and weekend of events, a test of leadership, perhaps, of Malcolm Turnbull's leadership, a political double bunger for the Prime Minister. On the one hand, he's got Conservatives within his own party that he's had to try to win over for a policy that's a little softer than many would like, particularly the moderates in his party. On the other hand, he's got the Labour Party, which, of course, wants him to go further. And then the Greens, they just say, look, we don't support any of it because it doesn't do anything that we want. And Australia has to take a much harder line in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and contributing to the targets set at the Paris Accord. Now, here's the irony. The Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister Tony Abbott, went to the Paris Agreement discussions, the Paris Accord, and he agreed to an aspirational target of 25% for Australia. When that was proposed in legislation by the current Prime Minister last week, Tony Abbott said he didn't like that approach. So the Prime Minister then said, okay, let's put it into a regulation instead of legislation. And of course, Tony Abbott didn't like that approach either. For Tony Abbott, it seems, it's about two things, driving a wedge amongst the Labour Party, but really no one believes other than that he just wants to drive a wedge in his own party with a view of, potentially seeing someone run for the leadership. That someone might have been Peter Dutton. At one stage during the week, he was pledging allegiance to the Prime Minister after saying the day before, I might have to cross the floor, in which case, of course, he'd have to resign as a frontbench member of the coalition. Incredibly self-centred politics. And in the middle of all of this is Australia's need to genuinely bring down energy prices and genuinely to make some headway on reducing greenhouse gas emissions so that we can stop the warming of our planet, play our part with the rest of the world community. Although you'd have to say most of the rest of the world community is pretty slow coming to that party as well. Look, to take us through that tonight, we wanted to talk to the Energy Director of the Grattan Institute, Tony Wood, and he joins us now. Hello, Tony.
Good evening, Stephen.
Well, it is messy politics, isn't it? And I know that you just, like me, kind of throw your hands in the air and say, well, what about the policy itself?
Yeah, look, I think that you summed it up very nicely, that in some ways the policy itself has become a proxy for at least two other different political battles. And, you know, the history of climate change in this country, sadly, has been one constant battlefield in which sort of almost littered with the dead carcasses of leaders have been brought down by it. And, you know, maybe the worst outcome in some ways would be if Malcolm Turnbull was to be brought down again. Now, that's not a statement in sympathy for Malcolm Turnbull, but I think if this policy goes down, then we once again will have forfeited, very sadly, the opportunity to actually make some progress along those objectives or towards those objectives that you articulated in your introduction.
Yeah, and yes, we shouldn't forget that, in fact, the no carbon tax under the government that I lead promise of Julia Gillard was what brought her down. So why is this such political dynamite, this whole policy area, for leaders?
Well, I think it's firstly because what it's done is in Australia, it's encapsulated the political roundabout of leadership, both the Labor Party and the coalition over the last 10 or 15 years. And secondly, in common with other parts of the world, I guess most notably the United States, the debate around climate science is almost something that people want to continue to debate despite the mounting evidence to the contrary. And I certainly heard your interview with Will Steffen in this regard quite recently. So, you know, those things get complicated, and then we add into that things that are completely disassociated with the actual energy policy itself, but external issues that have caused our electricity prices to go up anyway. Put all those three together, and you've got a horrible witch's brew, and the brewers have certainly had fun with this. And if it had been about policy, I'm sure we would have solved this in 2007, 2009, 2011, 2000, so on and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
But clearly it's not.
Well, it's a shame because it is one of the most important policies that we could possibly be, you know, finding consensus over. But I know that, in fact, Tony Abbott's been saying, look, he doesn't want to find consensus, actually, and he's been very successful in niggling away from his backbench position to ensure that consensus wasn't reached. But he's not the only one, of course, and there are people genuinely who have a real commitment to old coal. So let's get to some of the science of it and how it all works. So how would the National Energy Guarantee work? How would that what is the proposal of the Prime Minister?
Sure. I guess the first thing to do is if I were you, I would not be looking up the dictionary definition of the word guarantee, because this is not a guarantee. However, I think because the trick there was, of course, that the language became politicised as well, and so you couldn't call it anything else, so we've now called it a guarantee. But at its core, Stephen, that this is actually, even though people tend to describe it as being incredibly complicated, at the core of it, it's actually very simple. All that's being said, really, is we're going to put an obligation on energy retailers, that's the people who sell homes and businesses their electricity, that progressively over the next, at the moment, 14 years, 12 to 14 years, we will reduce greenhouse gas. We will sell you electricity that is consistent with meeting an emissions reduction target. Now, the actual mechanism itself is completely indifferent as to what that target has to be. It's just a mechanism that says, retailers, you have to reduce emissions over the next, between now and 2030, to meet this target. And secondly, it says, and in doing so, you have to ensure that you have the electricity available through your suppliers to meet the needs of your customers when those needs arise, including at peak times. Now, that doesn't seem particularly controversial. Well, you know, if someone sells you, enters into a contract to sell you something in the future, you would like to think they've actually got that something to sell in that future. So at the core of it doesn't seem all that controversial, but when it's been put together the way it is in this political environment, it's been made so. So at the core of it, it's actually a combination of two related but quite in some ways different obligations on energy retailers.
Now, it has a couple of other features. The government is proposed as a purchaser of last resort for people who might generate renewable energy. So, and this is to allow for them to go to their bankers and say, look, we've got a guarantee that our product will be purchased, if not by consumers, industry, then eventually by government. Therefore, you can bank on us. It'll make that more investable.
Now, what's happened now is that, this particular option that you've just talked about arose only quite recently from a report from the Australian Competition Commission, which at its core is fundamentally concerned about the affordability of electricity, which almost fills out the third leg of what people sometimes call the energy trilemma, that is affordability, reliability and low emissions. Mm. When the ACCC did its work on affordability, and it was looking at the concentration of market power, not enough competition in that market, what it said was, look, we're hearing from stakeholders in the industry that as we move forward into this policy space with the NEG, there will be people who will be, some of these new generation, and we want more generators. We don't want to have the same people continuing to dominate the game. We want new generators. The problem is they're finding it very difficult to get customers to sign up for more than 5 years or so. And if you're going to make a major investment, you need longer-term credibility if you want to bank the deal. Mm. And so what they've said is, look, maybe it would be a good idea if the government was almost the financier of last resort. That is, it said, look, we're not going to... The intention isn't to pay for electricity. The intention is that if electricity prices in the wholesale market, that's the money those generators get paid by the retailers, if that falls dramatically in the future, then we will come in and we will basically prop it up. And the number that would be the trigger for the government to then prop it up would be actually quite low, but high enough so that the companies investing would know that they wouldn't go bust completely, and their bankers in particular could still get their money. So that's the idea. I'm not sure it's a particularly great idea, but that's the idea here, that would actually provide potentially more competition in the generation market. And that would arguably be a good thing for helping put more pressure on prices.
Yeah. Our guest on Open House is Tony Wood, AM. He's the leader of the Grattan Institute's energy program, and he's led that program since mid-2011 when you've had a lot on your plate. 1-300-40-2020 if you'd like to talk to us tonight about the NEG, interested in your take on the politics and what might play out over the next few weeks or so. Well, then let's get to this issue of the legislated reductions versus the regulated reductions and why that's such a big deal.
Okay. So most of the key policies that we've had on climate change, whether they be federal or whether they be state level, have been legislated. Renewable energy targets at the Commonwealth level and similarly renewable energy targets at the state level. The difficulty with legislation is that if you want to change it, you need to change the legislation, which means you've got to go through Parliament. Now, at the Commonwealth level, what that means is that the Commonwealth was proposing to legislate the reduction in emissions that you spoke about before, that is, 26 to 28%, or in particular, specifically at 26% reduction in emissions against the 2005 baseline, what they were in 2005, by 2030. Hmm. That's the target that we're going to put in legislation, and that would then mean that to change that target would have required a change in legislation, which would have obviously meant whoever's in government at the time, including a Labor government, would have to go back to the lower house and the upper house to change the legislation, and who knows what they might be facing.
Yes.
So the Labor Party in particular, but some of the states who do have some influence over this process, even though they're not obviously in the Commonwealth Parliament, but they have control over what gets legislated through to change the national electricity law, which is not the emissions target side of things, but specifically how that target then actually is put in place in the electricity market. They, and I think in good faith to some extent, have said, look, that target's not high enough, and we're worried that in the future it'll be very difficult to change. We think it would be better if it was put in regulation. So that's where things sat until about Thursday of last week, that the Commonwealth government said, no, we're going to put this in legislation, and it'll be up to a future government of any ilk to argue in the Parliament to change that target to a higher number, or maybe a lower number, but higher really is the particular issue. Because the Labor Party has argued that we should have a 45% reduction in emissions by 2030 rather than the Commonwealth Coalition's position of 26%. And so that's where it's at. Now, what then, and the state governments, in particular Victoria, were threatening to not allow the implementation of the, even though the Commonwealth might still legislate this,
yeah,
they weren't
going
to allow
part.
That to yeah. be played. Exactly right. They wouldn't do their part in allowing that to actually go into the national electricity law and therefore be implemented, unless it was put in regulation. Now, that together with a concern as to whether or not the NEG would reduce prices had became a really touch point for in the Commonwealth Parliament and certainly within the coalition over the last week, sufficiently such that the Prime Minister and the Energy Minister, Josh Frydenberg, who's been the shepherd of all this all the way through,
yeah.
said, look, we will now put this in regulation. What that means is the minister, whoever that is in the future, will set the target and will be able to change the target. But in particular, the actual target itself and any changes of targets will require confirmation or an assessment by the ACCC to ensure that changing the target or the initial target itself won't put up power prices. And that's where we ended up as of Friday afternoon.
Yeah, which was a political act of, weakness perhaps on the part of the Prime Minister. It's very hard to know exactly how that'll play out next week. But if he goes ahead with that approach, he'll get the support of the Labor Party because they like the idea that when they become the government, in their thinking, they will be able to change the target just with a regulation. Regulations, by the way, are subject to disallowance by the Houses of Parliament as well, but it's not as hard as it's not like legislation. It's a different process. So, look, the politics of that are very interesting because you end up with the possibility you've got the moderate coalition members and the Labor Party voting yes, and about between five and ten conservative coalition members voting no.
And that would be, mildly entertaining is the right description, but it would certainly be an unusual set of circumstances. I'm sure the Federal Labor Party is having an enormous pleasure with what's going on at the moment. Effectively, they don't have to do anything. They can just watch the self-destructive tendencies of the current government to play out. And some would argue that's what the Labor Party did to itself in that period of time when you described between Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard. So this could be, who knows which way this is going to go. I mean, the plan at the moment is that the cabinet is meeting, I believe, tonight. And obviously certain members of that cabinet, including Peter Dutton, will be asked to sign up to this revised version of the NEG.
Mm-hmm.
That will then be put to the coalition party room at a meeting on Tuesday morning. And in the meantime, states may or may not decide. I suspect what will happen now is the states will hold back for a bit, although the indications are that they should support it because, A, it gives them what they want, that is, it puts the target in regulation, which means a future Labor minister could change it without having to go to Parliament. And secondly, the idea that it would require a test for lowering prices would seem to be a relatively easy one, at least to start with, because the ACCC, in its report on prices, has already said it supports the MEG. So, you know, you would think that would mean, from a Labor perspective, this is, thank you very much, it's all over. But, of course, there'd be many people, including, obviously, Tony Abbott, who would say, well, if this is a policy that's going to be supported by Labor, therefore, just by definition, we don't want it, which is a terrible situation to be in because the one thing we have needed, and major customers, small customers, energy suppliers, large and small, have been calling to say, look, we need to support this guarantee. This is what we need to have some degree of bipartisan support for a policy that's been so sorely needed for so long.
Yes. And would that be your plea if you were around that dinner table tonight where the Cabinet is having dinner together? What would you be saying to them?
Apart well, that from would be my summation. Look, I think the unfortunately, we've been, I think, behind all this. There's this proxy debate around leadership and so forth within the coalition. And, you know, you'd like to think, look, leave that to play out if people want to play that. And, you know, I'm not in any way, you know, denigrating the importance of major issues of political importance within the party have to be played out. But, you know, the consequence of not passing the guarantee this time around, and not because this is a perfect policy, it happens to be a relatively well-designed, clever policy. When you put it together with a usefully aspirational target, yet to be done, and together with the recommendations of the ACCC on price, you end up with a combination, I think, that gives everybody what they want. And my argument to those in the coalition who are arguing that we should be more concerned about prices and less about emissions is to say, well, look, this gives you what you want. What you've now got on the table is a policy that will not adversely increase emissions without in a way that would impact on prices. If you're concerned about you want baseload coal-fired power stations for reliability, this policy makes sure that reliability is protected, whether that turns out to be, you know, coal-fired power stations or large-scale wind and solar with backup or whatever, this policy has that in place. So the fundamental policy concerns you've got will be satisfied by this National Energy Guarantee or NEG. On that basis, if you're concerned about good policy and you'd like to think political leaders of conviction are, then you should support this policy. If you don't, the things you don't like about it, they can progressively be adjusted over time. But at its core, it provides a platform for delivering the sort of energy transition that we so desperately need while not adversely affecting power prices or reliability.
Well, there it is. Let's see how it plays out. But look, thank you so much for spending part of your Sunday night with us and taking us through that so carefully.
You're very welcome, Stephen. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Tony Wood, his energy policy director there at the Grattan Institute, a very well-respected think tank. And you can just hear the frustration, can't you, I think, in his voice. What would you be saying if you were around the Cabinet table tonight at that dinner? What would you be saying to our leaders, our national leaders, the Cabinet? Would you say, hold the line? Would you say, cave in? What exactly would you say? And what would you say if you could have 10 minutes with the member for Warringah, Tony Abbott? Because he is certainly not holding back. He wrote something for the Daily Telegraph just over the weekend saying this: ask people what they want from energy policy and the answer overwhelmingly is lower power bills. In this week's news poll, 63% said the government's priority should be cutting prices, 10% preventing blackouts, and just 24% reducing emissions. Why didn't he write just 10%? Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's 24% is more than 10%, Tony. But the message is pretty clear, he goes on, Tony Abbott. A government that wants to win an election but has lost 38 successive news polls must focus on price. That's exactly what the so-called National Energy Guarantee does not do, says Tony Abbott, who's just not holding back anymore on his criticism of the Prime Minister. And you get the impression that he won't rest unless he gets his way, and his way seems to be, in some way at least, to be a payback for being deposed by Malcolm Turnbull. You can understand why that will have hurt him personally and in lots of other ways. And you can also understand that he feels strongly about this policy, but Where do you draw the line, I guess, is a question I'd love to hear your views on. Where do you draw the line on constantly preventing the moving forward of something, just some kind of consensus that will get some way towards achieving what you've said you want, one of the things you've said you want? Where do you draw the line on that? I think it's a dilemma. You know, every Member of Parliament faces it. You go, especially if you're a member of a party, you go to Parliament with your own convictions, you go to Parliament with your own constituents' ideas rattling around in your head, the people that you've spoken to on the weekend. But at the end of the day, if you're part of a party room, and especially if you're part of a cabinet making policy, it takes a special kind of person to say, I am the only one here who's right. The rest of you are wrong, and I'm not prepared to give a little in order to see if we can't find a way forward together. Gosh, sometimes you can find consensus across on the other side as well. And that's when our parliament works really well, like when it stood up against those dreadful comments made by Fraser Anning in his first speech in the Senate this week. The parliament came together then and condemned racist remarks, but we can't get cheaper energy or make a dent on saving the planet. Come on.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.